guys. Welcome back to the Killer Kind Podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Miller, and I'm happy to be back with another episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am excited. I hope everyone had a great Valentine's Day or a singles awareness day, as some might refer to it as. And as always, I want to say thank you to those that have reached out about the last episode. It was definitely a tough one to listen to. I had one person say they literally had to stop it and come back later because it was just too much, which I totally understand and get. I had the luxury of being able to cut out the parts where I tear up, or I can stop recording and come back when I need to, and you guys don't even notice, but it definitely happens. So just know my emotions are right there with yours. This week, we have a little bit different of a case for you. This week, we are talking about a case that the security footage is unfortunately more famous than the victim. Or in other cases, if you've seen the footage, you might can instantly tell me who the victim is. So don't worry, I'll leave a link to the footage in the show notes if you want to pull it up and have it ready to go and hit play when we start discussing it here in a little bit. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into the case, shall we? Let's get into the bizarre case of Missy Beavers. Forty-five-year-old Terry Leanne Strickland, better known as Missy, was born on August 9, 1970. Born to parents James and Norma Strickland. She was born in Graham, Texas, but she grew up in the city called Jacksboro with her parents, also her younger brother Clint and her older brother Clifford. As a child, Missy was said to be very outgoing and fun to be around, and someone who was always surrounded by friends. People said Missy never met a stranger. She was always kind and considerate, always willing to include everyone, no matter what she was doing. This carried on throughout her days in school and in well past her time in high school, where she graduated in 1988 from Jacksboro High School. From there, Missy attended Tarleton State University, where she received a Bachelor of Science degree in 1995. While attending college, and for a while after, Missy was working at a Bell's department store where she met and became friends with a woman named Marcia. Marcia said Missy was a beautiful young girl at the time and thought she would be a good match for her older son, Brandon. Brandon Beavers worked for his family's business, which was a fuel distribution company. He seemed to be a good guy, and Missy quickly fell for Brandon. And the feelings were mutual. Marcia said that after their first date, Brandon was completely smitten. And just 9 months later, the two got married on June 20th, 1998. After the two were married, they bought a home together in a town called Red Oak, Texas. Red Oak is about 30 minutes outside of Dallas and has been named one of the best places to live in Texas. After settling into their new lives together, Missy decided she wanted to go back to school to get her teaching license for special education. It was something she was passionate about. And after graduating, she taught special education for 2 years before she became pregnant with their first child. She had her daughter Hannah in 2001, and Missy and Brandon would go on to have 3 beautiful girls, Allie in 2003 and Sarah in 2007. And after she started having her children, she decided to quit teaching so she could stay at home with her girls. But in true Missy fashion, she had a couple of side hustles too to help bring more money into the home. But it seemed it just wasn't for the money. Missy really was the kind of person who loved to do a lot of different things at one time. I feel like she was the kind of personality that she couldn't sit still for long. The Beaver family was also very involved in their community as a whole. They attended a church called the Cowboy Church, which they loved. Missy was known to be very religious and have a close relationship with God, and everything was going great with Missy. After she started being a stay-at-home mom, she found another passion outside of her family and the church. She fell in love with fitness. She really wanted to get back in shape after her 3 pregnancies, so she spent a few years trying to find the balance between a healthy home life and her health journey. But Missy said it was hard. She struggled finding the balance between the two, trying to stick to a diet, trying to find time to work out, but also making sure that, you know, she's there for her family as well. But eventually, she found her rhythm and discovered what worked best for her. Missy realized that she had a message to share and wanted to help other moms who might be struggling like she was. So when her youngest daughter, Sarah, started the second grade, Missy decided to help the other women just like her. During her fitness journey, she decided she wanted to become a personal trainer, which was a way to combine her passion for teaching and her passion for fitness. So she took some classes and became certified. And this was going to be her way to help other women who struggled like her. Missy started teaching one-on-one classes at the local gym called Anytime Fitness. 3 months later, Missy decided she wanted to become a Camp Gladiator fitness instructor. Camp Gladiator was a program that she had done herself during her fitness journey, and she loved the program. So she was excited to become a Camp Gladiator instructor herself. She attended a 5-week instructor training event, and in 2015, she became a certified instructor. One thing to note about Camp Gladiator is that it's a type of workout that typically takes place outside on a flat surface, whether that's a large field or a big parking lot. So the Anytime Fitness gym was not really the place for this. So she had to find somewhere else to hold her classes. Not far from her own church was a church called Creekside Church of Christ, which was technically in the neighboring city of Midlothian, Texas. And they were willing to let Missy use their campus to hold her fitness classes. It had a covered awning out front that the group could work out under if it started raining. But the church also allowed them to use the inside of their building as well in case the weather was ever too bad. Because Camp Gladiator was known to never cancel their classes, even for bad weather. So having an indoor and outdoor option was perfect for this type of class. The Creekside Church of Christ isn't your typical looking church. It didn't have a steeple or stained glass windows. It was really just a large rectangular building. It had many different classrooms as well as the main sanctuary where Sunday services were held. It was a pretty big place and the perfect spot for what Missy needed. Now, Missy's classes were described as strengthening and encouraging. Not only was she teaching these women about fitness and health, she was also uplifting them and being their biggest supporter. She became pretty popular in the area, and she had a good amount of people who, you know, ended up enjoying her classes each week, including male and female. On Sunday, April 17th, 2016, it had been raining all night long, but in true Camp Gladiator fashion, that was no reason to cancel. So she posted on Facebook that the class was still on and she was looking forward to seeing everyone. Now, Missy had started her day very early, which was often something that she did. She was up by 3:30 a.m. to make it to the church by 4:30. Technically, her class didn't start until 5, but she had a few clients that wanted to start earlier due to work schedules or things like that. So being the type of person that she was, she made accommodations for people and hosted what she would call the early birds before the actual class time. Now, just a few days prior to the rainy April day, she had attended a Camp Gladiator Total Transformation Camp in Austin, where the Camp Gladiator started. It was essentially a conference for coaches at their headquarters. Now, let me pause and say that Camp Gladiator was very much one of those types of organizations that seems to be a pyramid scheme. It may not be, but they encourage their trainers to be their own boss. How many times have we heard that in pyramid schemes? While also trying to recruit other people to join under them and become a Camp Gladiator trainer as well. That said, they do have a pretty big following in Texas and more, you know, most other surrounding southern states. And they're still going strong today. So good for them. Everybody loves them. So I don't see any huge red flags, but it's still just a little weird. Now, a couple of days before the 17th, Missy's husband, Brandon, had a minor surgery, and his mother helped take care of him so Missy could take care of the kids and still focus on her fitness classes. But his recovery for the surgery wouldn't take long because Brandon had a trip planned to Gulfport, Mississippi. It was an annual company fishing trip down in Biloxi that Brandon went on pretty much every year. This was an annual thing for him. At 5:20 a.m. on that morning, Brandon made a Facebook post of the Texas weather radar. He was saying he had a flight to catch at noon, and He ended up catching it. He arrived in Biloxi around 7:30 p.m. that night. His flight had been delayed because of the weather, but at least he made it. At 6:49 p.m., Missy posted to her Camp Gladiator Facebook, sharing her class times for the week, the location of each class, as well as explaining what each class would entail. At 7:55 p.m., she made another Facebook post saying the class would still be on at 5 a.m. for the following day, rain or shine. At 9:15 p.m., Brandon made another Facebook post as well, saying that this was his first stop after the five-hour plane trip. And this post had a geotag location of the half-shell oyster house in Biloxi. Then, at 9:23 p.m., Missy made her last Facebook post, saying, "Good night, all. I have to get up at 3:30 a.m. See you bright and early." We found out later that Missy and Brandon did speak on the phone at around 9:30 p.m. to say goodnight, and they each said, "I love you." On Monday, April 18th, Missy Beavers woke up bright and early that morning as planned, and she headed over to the Creekside Church for another day of training. She made the 15-minute drive from her home in Red Oak to the church. In the meantime, Missy and Brandon's three girls were at home, sound asleep. Now, the plan was for Missy's mother-in-law to come stay with the girls until Missy got back from her two training sessions that she had scheduled that morning. However, there had been a pretty bad thunderstorm that rolled in that morning, and they decided that it wouldn't be necessary for her to get out in the bad weather. So, since the girls were 15, 13, and 8 years old, Missy decided it would be fine for the girls to stay home while she was gone, since she'd probably be back before they even woke up anyway. So, Missy made the drive to the church, arriving at around 4:15 a.m. When Missy arrived, she started unpacking her things in the parking lot. She had a good bit to unpack. She had extra yoga mats, small hand weights, and a table to set up for the campers to sign in at. Now, one thing to note was that Missy did carry a gun with her as well. Her husband didn't love her going to these dark, empty parking lots alone so early in the morning. So, a few weeks prior to the 18th, he bought her a gun to carry with her. Her students knew she carried this for protection, but also not just for her, but for them. One camper, as they're often referred to as, said Missy would hide the gun under one of the orange cones they used during their workouts. Anyways, after getting to the church and unpacking some of her things, she sat her keys on the tailgate of her truck as she took the first load in to the church. At 4:18 a.m., Missy walked into the church to begin turning the lights on, which was typical, even if she was not going to be holding the class inside, just in case any of the campers needed to use the restroom. So Missy makes her way into the church to turn the lights on and start unloading all of her gear. But Missy had no idea just what she was walking into. At 4:35 a.m., a brand new camper showed up to the church. He was new to the class, so he had never been there before. He was about 5 minutes late due to the rain. But when he arrived at the church, he didn't see really anyone except for Missy's truck in the parking lot. So he assumed that she must have gone inside. So he made his way up to the doors of the church, and he said the door appeared to be locked. However, since he had never been there, he didn't realize that there was actually a latch that you just had to turn first before pulling open the door. He then tried calling Missy's cell phone, but she didn't answer. So not knowing what else to do, he went back to his car to wait for someone else to show up. At around 5 a.m., two other campers, who were a couple, arrived at the Creekside parking lot. The three campers said hello and introduced themselves to each other, and the new camper explained the situation. However, the couple knew how to get into the church, so together all three campers made their way inside the church to look for Missy. Once inside, they noticed a lot of broken glass inside the church and down the hallways. They called out for Missy and got no response. After a few minutes of looking around, one of the campers walked into one of the rooms and found the 45-year-old fitness instructor. But sadly, she was lying on the ground in a pool of blood, surrounded by broken glass. It appeared that Missy had a significant wound to her head as well as many injuries to her chest. They all completely panicked and two of them dialed 911. While the police were on their way, the wife of the couple called Missy's husband, Brandon. She told him that Missy had been in an accident and that he needed to get to the church ASAP. But Brandon, not really realizing the extent of what had happened, said, "Well, I'm out of town in Biloxi and I can't be there very quickly." But he said that he would call his mother, who could head that way. The woman didn't really know what else to say, and I'm sure she didn't want to be the one to tell him the truth, so she hung up the phone. However, her husband decided to call Brandon back and break the news that Missy was actually deceased and that he needed to get on a flight immediately. When police arrived just 10 minutes after the initial phone call, they immediately taped off the scene and started what would become a much more difficult and confusing investigation, more than they ever could have imagined. Meanwhile, in Biloxi, Brandon was scrambling to get a flight home. He called his mother to explain what happened to Missy, and she jumps into action. She calls Brandon's sister, Christy Stout, to have her go to the Beavers' home to stay with their three girls. She then had the task of calling Missy's mother to deliver the horrible news. Christy, Missy's mom, and several other family members arrived at the Beavers' home early that morning to wake the girls up. They sat them down in the living room and told them that something terrible had happened to their mother and that she was not going to be coming home. Brandon's sister said that she just remembers the girls screaming and crying. Then one of the girls cried out saying, "I can't live without my mother." Several hours later, Brandon finally made it home. He ended up having to drive a rental car given to him by someone on the trip, and he pulled in the driveway and he ran inside and grabbed all three girls, and they all started huddling together along with Missy's mother, and they were just sobbing. Christy said she and the rest of the family members that were there just placed their hands on their backs and tried to comfort them the best they could, but really everyone was in tears. It was a very heartbreaking moment, she said. At 6:55 a.m., the sun was starting to rise and the police were already hard at work trying to figure out what had happened to Missy. And initially, they noticed all the broken glass and how several of the interior and exterior doors showed signs of forced entry. So initially, everyone was thinking this was certainly a burglary gone wrong. Now, at some point, they noticed the signs around the church that said, "This property is protected by video surveillance." So they knew they needed to check that footage. In true form, several of the surveillance cameras weren't functioning, mainly the exterior cameras. However, most of the cameras inside worked, and what they captured was pretty odd. Their surveillance cameras captured someone breaking into the church at around 3:50 a.m., entering through the church's kitchen. There was movement detected on one of the cameras earlier than 3:50, although no one was spotted. It appeared that someone may have just busted out a window or glass door, and it's suspected that the person was trying to see if an alarm would go off or if the police would show up if an alert had been sent out. But then shortly after 3:50 a.m., someone can be seen on the surveillance footage. But again, what they see is weird. It appears to be a person carrying a crowbar and a hammer, but they are dressed head to toe in full tactical gear. They are wearing black boots, black pants, black long sleeves, and gloves. They are also wearing what appears to be a bulletproof vest with the word "police" printed on the back in white. They're also wearing a helmet that covers their head and a dark face mask that seems to fully cover their entire face and neck. So, it's basically impossible to tell anything about this person at all. I mean, we can't even tell for sure if it's male or female. Now, I will say that although this looks like, you know, full head-to-toe tactical gear, or some have said riot gear, many explain that, including actual police, this doesn't really look like an authentic police outfit. Many believe that this is actually some sort of costume. One of the only noticeable features, though, about this person, really the only thing that can give hope to investigators and some sort of lead, is how the person is walking. They seem to walk with their feet turned outward, especially their right foot. They almost seem to drag that right foot a little bit too as they walk. Not completely, but their right foot is turned more outward than the left. Again, I will leave a link in the show notes to the security footage if you want to kind of follow along. Go back and watch that. Maybe pause this part and go back and watch it and then come back. But it's a must-see. You have to watch it on this case. Now, police would announce later that they estimated the person to be between 5'2" and 5'7" tall, even maybe 5'8" with their full gear on. They also said they believe the person in the video could have a possible injury to their foot or may have had a disability that caused them to walk that specific way. The person can be seen using the wall to prop themselves up or help guide them as they walk, which have led some to speculate that they could have been intoxicated. The security footage is a huge part of this one and the things that has caused great debate as well, which we'll get more into. So we have this unknown person wearing a strange outfit to seemingly burglarize this church. This person can be seen for about 20 minutes or so walking around the church, banging on doors and windows with their hammer, and seemingly just tearing the place apart. They're not moving fast or anything. They don't appear to be in a hurry. But you can kind of guess they seem to be on a mission. It's like they're clearly looking for something is what it seems like. Now, as we know, Missy arrived at the church at around 4:15 a.m., and she is seen entering the church at 4:18. Then one of her campers arrives at 4:35. But neither he nor the couple that showed up closer to 5 saw anyone else coming or going. Nobody saw anyone leaving the church building. So the window of time to commit this murder was very small. And how did they leave the church without being seen? There were multiple exits from the church itself, but there was only one way in and out of the church parking lot. So they would have had to perfectly time their exit as to not be seen by someone. At around 3:30 p.m., the Midlothian County Police Department held a press conference to alert the public of their findings. And I do have a clip of that for you here.
Good afternoon. My name is Carl Smith, and thanks for coming today. First of all, we want to offer our heartfelt condolences to the family and the victims. This is a tragic event for all involved, including our community. This morning at approximately 5 a.m., Midlothian officers and EMS were dispatched to an unresponsive person to the Creekside Church in the 5400 block of East Highway 287. Midlothian officers arrived at the location just after fire, and department medics arrived on the scene, and the medics were attending an unresponsive female as officers entered the church. The officers observed a lot of glass, broken glass on the floor, and the female, as well as the female. They started a search of the building to make sure there were no other individuals in the facility. During the search, the officers found evidence of forced entry into the building, indicating a possible burglary. The entire building was searched, and nobody was found. After that, the victim was pronounced deceased by Ellis County Justice of the Peace, Bill Woody, and officers at the scene located evidence, again, forced entry. The victim was identified as Terry Beaver, 45 years of age, from Midlothian, Texas. The victim was transported to Dallas County Medical Examiner's Office. During the course of the investigation, detectives located and collected the video evidence. The video depicts an unknown male walking inside the church building, dressed in police-type clothing and wearing a helmet and gloves. We are releasing the video believe Commander Spann is going to do, let you guys know how to get that through our YouTube channel. We are asking and soliciting any information regarding this offense or identity of any unknown male on the video asked to call Midlothian Police Department at 972-775-3333. The investigation is ongoing and further updates will be provided as additional information becomes available.
They then released a 7-second video from the surveillance footage showing the intruder walking around the church. Obviously, this is for the hopes of somebody recognizing the person or the way that they walk. Now, during the press conference, you heard them say this was an unknown male. However, the following day, they retracted the statement saying it could actually be male or female. But the investigation continues, right? So initially, police were thinking, as we know, this was a burglary gone wrong, especially after detecting forced entry and broken doors and glass inside the church. However, after conducting a search of the entire church, nothing appeared to be missing. There was some expensive jewelry on Missy herself. She had her iPad and her handgun in her truck, and the church did have some money, and nothing appeared to be taken. That being said, there was one room in particular that was torn apart, and that was the church office, which some would say would be a good place to find money in the church. However, again, despite papers and folders being thrown around the room, nothing appeared to be taken. So now investigators were thinking, could this be a targeted attack on Missy? And the intruder spent the first 20 minutes trying to make it look like a burglary gone wrong. But the question was the motive. None of her belongings were taken. She was not sexually assaulted. So this really just looked like someone who simply wanted her dead. The day after Missy's murder, the community held a vigil for the slain 45-year-old. Her husband was seen by the local news sobbing into a friend's arms. The entire family was torn up by Missy's death, and rightfully so. On that day, an autopsy was conducted as well. And from what I can tell, the police have never said the exact cause of death. However, they did tell the public that Missy died from puncture wounds to her head and chest. And based on various press conferences and information released by investigators, many have come to the conclusion that she was attacked with the end of a hammer. Again, take that with a grain of salt because it hasn't officially been concluded by police, but we do know that the person in the video is carrying the hammer. So that does kind of make sense. But other than that, I mean, who knows what a puncture wound can mean? It could mean anything. Some people have said it could be, you know, gunshots. But again, this hasn't been confirmed. So who knows? Police have said, though, that there's no gun found at the scene. The only gun found was Missy's, and it was located inside her truck. But again, that doesn't rule out the possibility of a gun being used in this crime. One could have been taken away from the scene by the attacker. Police have also announced that Missy was killed within just 4 minutes from the time that she entered the church. People have suspected this information was discovered from the Fitbit that she wore, which would have been able to detect the exact moment that her heart stopped. Now, as the investigation goes on, police struggle to find a motive for the murder, but per usual, they start with those closest to Missy, including her husband. Police obtain search warrants for all of the family members' cell phones, and after looking into Missy and Brandon's history, it became apparent that the two had some struggles in their marriage about a year prior, a little bit over. Not only were Missy and Brandon having some financial issues, but Missy had at least one affair. And because of this, the two had started going to couples counseling. However, about 10 months prior to her murder, Missy and Brandon had committed themselves to their marriage once again on their 18th wedding anniversary, and things had really been going well for the two. Over the last 10 months, they were exchanging very loving text messages and posting about their love and happiness on each other's Facebook pages. However, investigators found messages, primarily on Missy's LinkedIn account, that led them to believe that she was still talking to other men. There was one man in particular that Missy had been messaging that seemed to be kind of comfortable, a comfortable situation, and the two had plans to get together soon. Then there was one man she was talking to that she had told one of her friends about, but that she said he was creepy. So not someone she was interested in, but still odd that she was talking to more than one man. Nonetheless, this led investigators to believe that Brandon might have found out about this and had become angry. But as we know, Brandon had a solid alibi. He was all the way in Mississippi, so there was no way it was him that committed the murder. But he could certainly have hired a hitman or someone to do the job for him. But Brandon wouldn't have been the only person police suspected for Missy's death. They interviewed several people, one being the wife of the man that she had cheated with, or any of the women involved with the men that she was talking to. Any one of those women could have found the messages investigators did and sought revenge. But then there was Randy, Brandon's dad. He was one of the suspects as well, not just to investigators, but some of the public believed that he had the same strange gait that the person in the surveillance footage had. And the similarity is pretty alarming. However, why would Randy kill Missy? Could he have found out about her affair? Or could Brandon have confided in his father about the recent messages he might have seen? Or could he have been the hitman? He certainly could. And he could have just taken the matters in his own hands. But that said, both Brandon and Randy were seen showing a lot of emotion. Their emotions and actions out in public after the murder didn't really match the emotions of the person who would have committed this heinous crime. Now, many people also suspected Randy because just a few days after the murder, a local dry cleaner called the police to report that Randy had dropped off a shirt covered in blood, and it appeared that he had already tried to wash the blood off himself. However, after Randy found out that he was under suspicion, he called the police to explain himself. He said that when he got the call about Missy, he and his wife had been in California on an RV trip, and when they got back, they were staying at their daughter's house. Well, their little chihuahua had gotten into a fight with the daughter's bigger dog, and the little chihuahua had sadly passed away. He said there was a lot of blood on both dogs, but he actually carried his little dog in his arms on the way to the vet. So that's where the blood came from, is what he says. And sure enough, when police confiscated the shirt, they tested the blood, and it did in fact prove to be blood of a dog. So I'm sure that was a whole crazy roller coaster of emotions for investigators. But again, Randy is a dead end, just like the rest of their suspects or the rest of the people they talked to. So after detectives ruled out Missy's husband and father-in-law, they seemed to have nothing else to go on until a local firearm store called to report a suspicious vehicle spotted on their surveillance footage not long before the murder. The SWFA, which stands for the Southwest Firearms, was a store located about a mile away from the Creekside Church of Christ. There's also nothing surrounding the gun store or the church, so I believe at certain angles you can even see the church from the gun store and vice versa. The store spotted a white Nissan Altima circling around their parking lot the night of the murder, just a few hours prior to Missy's death. And the strange vehicle can be seen on security cameras just circling around the empty parking lot with their lights off for pretty much most of the time. There were times that they would switch the lights back on, but they were mostly driving around in the dark. Due to the rain at the time, the license plate was not visible, so they have no way to identify the driver. So police released this footage to the public and asked for the owner of the vehicle to come forward so they can rule them out as a suspect. But unfortunately, nobody ever came forward, and nobody has since. Then there was another tip that someone called in claiming to see a dark SUV leaving the church parking lot that morning. They did not release this information to the public because there was no security footage to confirm the sighting. So they just kind of kept it in their back pocket. But then there were several tips that came in about a man named Bobby Wayne Henry. He was actually a former police officer who worked as a licensed security guard at Missy's funeral. He had attended the church at the Creekside Church of Christ as well. So those at Missy's funeral said he walked with a limp and had a similar build as Missy's killer. And come to find out, Bobby had been suspended from the police force due to a sexual charge back in 1996. He also, and maybe more importantly, drove a car that was similar to the second vehicle police were interested in, that dark SUV. And to top it all off, to put the cherry on top for Mr. Bobby here, he too had admitted to owning a riot gear, or excuse me, owning riot gear that did not fit him anymore, which fully explains the person in the video. The clothes look like they don't fit. It's riot gear. It's just very odd. So the first thing police do was they hired a forensic podiatrist to analyze Bobby's walk and limp. The results of that were inconclusive, which could be incriminating, but the biggest issue was that Bobby was over 6 feet tall, and as we know, it was determined that the killer is between 5'2 and 5'7, so the height is nowhere near the same. And sadly, he had a very strong alibi, and ultimately was cleared as a suspect. So after several men in Missy's life had been ruled out, police started to think that maybe we were looking in the wrong direction. Maybe her killer is actually a female. Many people who have reviewed the footage, myself included, believe that there are certain mannerisms that appear to be more female than male. Like I said, it appears that the clothing is oversized, which could indicate that a female attacker was trying to look like a male. But again, I encourage you guys to go take a look at the footage and see what you think, because at certain angles, I'm seeing male, and then at others, I'm convinced it's a woman. To this day, no one has been charged in connection with Misty Beaver's murder. So let's recap, though. We've got a 45-year-old fitness instructor who was murdered between 4:18, 4:25 a.m. at a church in Midlothian, Texas, about a 15-minute drive from her home. Her and her husband had marital problems about a year prior to her death, but they had reconciled and all was well for a while, despite messages between Missy and other men on her LinkedIn page. This husband is ruled out pretty early on, as he was the first person they looked at. He certainly wasn't the killer, but could he have hired a hitman? Yes, absolutely possible. But again, there was zero evidence suggesting that Brandon was involved in the death of his wife. Missy's father-in-law was considered a suspect as well due to the fact that his body type and walk were similar to the killer's. However, he too was ruled out by police, and there was zero evidence connecting him to the crime. Now, because Missy had an extramarital affair, there's a chance the wife of the man she was having the affair with could have sought revenge. However, the affair clearly took place well over a year ago, and it doesn't seem like the two were still in contact, so it wouldn't make sense for that woman to seek revenge now. However, as we know, Missy was speaking to at least one other man that investigators believed she was seeking a romantic relationship with, or at least might have been having an online relationship with the plans to meet up. In my opinion, anyone could have found those messages. Brandon, someone in the other man's life, etc. This could certainly have been a motive to kill. So the biggest debate, besides whether or not this killer is male or female, is whether or not the attack was targeted or if it was not targeted and Missy was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. So let's unpack that a little bit. This is one of those cases for the longest time I believed Missy was targeted and killed by a female attacker. There was a moment that you could not convince me otherwise. However, since diving into this case a little bit more, I do slightly have a doubt about that theory. I haven't completely given up on it, though, don't get me wrong, mainly because of how strange the attacker acted and how they dressed. So, to me, some random person terrorizing a church wouldn't be in full riot gear. They wouldn't be seemingly taking their time. I mean, they appear to be out on a leisurely stroll. Secondly, why at 4 a.m.? If you're going to rob a church or rob anywhere, if that's even what they were going to be doing, to me, you would do it more in the middle of the night, like midnight or something, not 4 a.m. Not like I have plans to rob anywhere. I'm not a burglar. Like I don't know when the actual times are. I don't know when the best times are, but it just seems to be a weird time to me. Then there's the fact that absolutely nothing was stolen. If the plan wasn't robbery, then what was the plan? If Missy wasn't being targeted? See, I'm already kind of talking myself out of these doubts. To me, it's just so bizarre. It definitely makes sense that somebody targeted Missy. But the window of time to kill this person and to get out without being seen is so small. Missy was someone who shared many details about her life on social media. I mean, she was posting exactly where she would be and when. It's hard to believe that someone or some random person doing God knows what at this church just happens to be there 20 to 30 minutes before someone else gets there and ends up killing them. I mean, why attack and kill someone just because you run into them at an empty church? I'm sure the place was pretty quiet, so the person didn't want to get caught. They could have avoided Missy, you would think. But some have argued that if this was a targeted attack, why didn't they just go to her home? Why do it at the church? And that's a good point. I mean, yes, her kids were there, so maybe that is why they didn't do it at the house. But like if they were stalking Missy's social media, they would also know that Missy's husband was out of town. So it would have been a great opportunity to do it at the home instead. Again, if it's a targeted attack, why kill Missy at the church when you know people are basically going to be getting there pretty soon after Missy? But maybe that was a better option than doing it at the home with her children. But then you have to think, if this wasn't targeted, then this person may not have known that someone else would be there. Some churches are even closed on Sunday, so why would they suspect that someone is going to be there at 4 a.m.? I mean, this is so frustrating. The reality is your mind can go two different ways. On one hand, you can think the obvious. This is a targeted attack, and there are a few different people that had motive. Then on the other hand, you could suspect that Missy was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and some crazed person was just terrorizing the church, and Missy happened to walk in on them, and they panicked and killed her. And speaking of an unplanned attack, many people have pointed out that in the video, the killer doesn't seem to be looking for anyone. You would think that if they were waiting around for Missy to arrive, that they would be looking out windows or doors for her. But no, this person appears just to be casually walking around the church in no rush at all, just basically tearing the place apart. But on the flip side, some people believe that they knew what time that she was going to be getting there and that they knew they had plenty of time to walk around the church to stage a burglary and then sit and wait for Missy. Some say it appears that they were just killing time before the attack, which again, I can completely see both sides. Like I said earlier, to this day, no one has been charged in connection with Missy Beaver's murder, despite extensive efforts made by investigators. They have come out saying a small amount of DNA was collected at the crime scene, but it was not enough to determine a complete profile. However, it might be useful in genetic genealogy, which has solved several cold cases recently. The motive for Missy's death is still unknown, and we may never know the true motive behind it, which still haunts her family and friends and everyone in the surrounding community. There is a reward of $150,000 for information leading to Missy's killer. If you or someone you know has any information about the case, please call Ellis County Crime Stoppers at 972-937-PAYS or 972-937-7297. Someone knows something, and this case can be solved. And that is the case of Missy Beavers. You already know what I'm going to say. Please share your thoughts with me. Let's chat about this one, because which theory are you leaning towards? Planned attack or burglary gone wrong? Also, be sure to share this case if you can, because this one is still unsolved and it needs to be heard. And maybe if the right person sees it and it sparks a memory and that person leads to the case being solved, I mean, anything is possible. Like I said, I'll leave a link to the surveillance footage from the case in the show notes, and be sure to head over to the podcast Instagram or Facebook page to share your thoughts or to help spread the word about Missy's case. With that said, I wanted to end the episode with a little weekly shout out that I'm going to try to start doing. I shared on our Instagram page, I wanted somebody to tell me their favorite case that we've covered so far. I know they're all hard to hear and things like that, but what has been one that you have wanted me to cover, and what is one that you would consider your favorite? So I had a sweet listener named Jessica. She left a sweet comment, but she said her favorite was the Joshua Maddox case. That one was so bizarre and strange. I highly recommend you check that one out if you haven't already. And I also have Casey, who said that obviously I don't love any, but because they are all hard and tragic, but the Colleen Ritzer case is one of her favorites. And I agree, that was one that I had wanted to cover for a while, and it was tough, but like you said, they're all hard. So be sure to head over to the podcast Instagram, keep an eye out on our stories and things like that, so you can be involved in the next episode. And with that said, that'll do it for me this week, guys. I'll be back soon with a brand new episode. Until then, stay safe. Bye.